Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're joining us today. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have fun with food today. How about that? We'll get into that in just a minute. I want to remind you that the goal of Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible, valid information and insights about diverse members of our community on diverse topics, and I can assure you this is a diverse one today. Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. Sometimes that's changes. Sometimes that's just ramifications of changes. Sometimes it's what happens if we just do it right, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. Our topic is interesting. Everybody seems to know about the concept of farm to table. We are not going to talk today about farm to table. We're going to talk about farm to school or school to farm or any other way that you may want to look at that. We're going to talk about the farm to school working group and their mission, which is to give our children an understanding of what it takes to get foods on your table at home and especially at school. Because an awful lot of things that go on with regard to food and kids, as we know, doesn't necessarily go the way we want it to. Sometimes it doesn't go the way we want it to because we're just not paying attention to the way it should go. And sometimes it doesn't go that way because if you give the average 7-year-old the right to eat whatever they want, it may not be the decision you want it to be. Anyway, farm to school wants to improve the connection between communities and how we deal with fresh, healthy foods and local food producers. It amazes, as I was looking and doing some research on this topic from my guests giving me lots of things to look at and pay attention to, it occurred to me that on the Central Coast we have a tremendous number of people who work in agriculture. And we seem to have a tremendous number of people who work in agriculture whose kids go to school and have absolutely no idea at all what agriculture is and, in a lot of cases, what their parents do. For those of you who know, it's been a discussion that's come up before. I am married to a middle school math teacher. She teaches at Flamson Middle School in Paso Robles. And her comment to me, among other things, was she has a tremendous number of kids who work, whose parents work in agriculture, especially in the wine industry in the Paso Robles area. And these kids have no idea at all about what agriculture is really about. All they know is their parents work hard, their parents work in agriculture, and other than that, that's all they seem to know about it. So what we're looking at is a partnership that has become a lot of programs, One Cool Earth, San Luis Obispo Office of Education, Central Coast Grown, the Wellness Kitchen, the CREEC Network, that's C-R-E-E-C Network, and the University of California CalFresh Nutrition Education Program, and all those things together are working on something called Farm to School. My guests today are Lisa Paniagua, and she is the Community Education Specialist and Coordinator for the School Garden Sustainability Program and part of UC Cooperative Extension. And she has a whole bunch of other things that she does, too. And Teresa Tree Lee, who's the coordinator of environmental education at San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. And she's also with the CREEC Network. Again, that is C-R-E-E-C Network. And Victoria Rose Carranza, who is the director of education for One Cool Earth. Victoria's been with us before talking about really cool things going on with their program. But together we're going to talk about how in the world to get our kids not only eating better, but understanding more about agriculture and what's going on. And sometimes that means learning about agriculture in school. Sometimes that means about hands-on projects. It means all kinds of stuff. And I guess where we probably need to start this, Teresa Tree, I'm going to start with you because I want you to explain what in the world the CREEC Network is. There's no K in this word CREEC.
That's right. It's not up the creek, but it is a acronym for California. Okay. So the C is for California, and the R is for regional. And EE in my world is environmental education. And then the C is for community. So it's region by region throughout California, people that are all dedicated to doing similar work to get environmental education in the schools. And we have built a network around this for about 18 years now, actually. And it's funded from California Department of Education, and I'm housed at the County Office of Education. So I kind of think of it sometimes as a clearinghouse of resources of environmental education for the teachers, but also as a connector to, or a web to connect people that are doing environmental education in the schools with each other and back to the schools. So it's It's a nexus between the agencies and the community organizations and the schools, and try to put them, link them together. So farm to school is definitely part of environmental education network here in our region.
Okay. Thanks for at least clearing up that part, because I kept looking at it and say, how do you explain on the radio how creek has nothing to do with creeks? So that was a good way to try and start that. I appreciate that. I want to remind folks that this is a call-in program. You're welcome to be part of this discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. You certainly can be part of this discussion. As the hour goes on, you'll probably have a better understanding of why you may want to be part of the discussion. Lisa, why don't I start with you on this regard, and that is that there's kind of a mission of tying kids and school and nutrition together in ways that it hasn't been done regularly in the past. What does that mean for all of you folks?
Well, specifically for UC Cal Fresh Nutrition Education, which is a program housed at UC Cooperative Extension, our mission is to get nutrition education in the classrooms at school, but we realize that there's many facets to not just learning about nutrition education, but really practicing with nutrition education. One of the ways that I'm able to do that is through my role as a school garden sustainability project coordinator, where we go to the schools that we serve, build gardens or revamp gardens, and attempt to sustain the gardens and eat from the gardens.
Okay. One of the recurring themes in a lot of the material that I got from all three of you as I looked at this to put the program together was that kids that learn how to grow food and how to nurture a garden are more likely willing to try something that's a little bit out of the ordinary.
That's it.
Because let's be realistic,
right.
A good portion of these kids, if it didn't come out of a package or from a fast food restaurant, it isn't valid. I mean, it's like, you know, you pull teeth getting kids to eat my favorite vegetable, which, yes, folks, it's Brussels sprouts. Now call up and be nasty to me if you want to be. But I think that's one of the things. I mean, there's things. If I talk to my grandkids about Brussels sprouts, one of the best things that ever happened was the fact that you can buy them on large stocks at a number of curbside farmers markets and things like that. And you also can do that in some markets now. So that became really cool. My grandkids, who would tell me those things are ridiculous and they smell bad when
you
cook
them and
stuff.
Is that a memory you have?
What?
Is that a memory you have?
Of what, Brussels sprouts?
Yeah.
Of being bad?
Just on the stock.
No, actually, on the stock was not that common to me until you're younger than I am.
Yeah,
you're
it blows
way
their
younger
mind.
Than, yeah, yeah. It's, but for a lot of kids, it's like, wait, this is really cool. I can just chop off these vegetables and eat them off here and warm them up. So what are we doing that's been different? I mean, I'm 65 years old. No big surprise. So that means that sometime about 45 plus years ago was the last time I dealt with a school garden in high school. And we had school gardens in my high school, but they seemed to have disappeared some time ago because they were either too much trouble or people weren't involved in them. And so what we're really talking about now is somehow getting kids back involved with hands-on agriculture. How are the schools reacting to this? Obviously, it's a reasonably new thing. Okay.
Yeah. You're looking at me, Fred. So I think I'll, yeah, this is.
Well, I know that you do at a couple of schools because we've talked about this before.
And it's interesting because I'm here talking mostly through the lens of garden-based nutrition
today. This is Victoria.
Yeah. And with One Cool Earth, we're really focused on sort of what Lisa was talking about, revamping existing gardens or getting in there. And sometimes it's not that they even have a garden that needs to be revamped, but they just need people to breathe life into it, human life. Get in there with the plants and interact with the students. And sure, there's this lens of you want them to go in and chomp on a snap pea, or you want them to go in there and revamp a bed and let's say, oh, we have corn stalks. Let's go ahead and take that bed out. And sure, so it has this food look at it, but how can we get the kids in there no matter if it's food related or not? Let's get them in there for science class. Let's get them in there for math class. Let's get them in there for social studies, engineering. You know, there's different components. And I think we need to be looking at nutrition because I've been hearing so much that nutrition is no longer in the schools. You know, there's no element of it in PE, or there's not really a lot of focus on it even in the cafeteria. They just go through the line, they pick up what they need to. But what if we had that lens where going out there and communicating with the plants in your food, you do it through going through all these different subjects. And you're getting in the garden and experiential learning and getting those senses with the kids, tasting, smelling, seeing. I mean, we don't necessarily have to have a specific, focus on that. So,
yeah. Tree, jump on in.
Yes, like Victoria's saying, that the school garden is really a great curriculum connector for the teachers to use it that way. It's a connector for the cafeterias to do messaging and promoting the kids eating in the cafeteria, their choices. And then the other connection I'd like to make is with the foodie movement. And then in this county, in this region, people are really into that, like you mentioned, farm to table. Mm-hmm. Well, let's have that connection with our school kids, too, that, oh, I'm a foodie. I like trying out,
pride.
Yeah, pride in trying out different culinary experiences. And I had the Brussels sprouts with mushrooms. I had kale, that get
the
them to
glaze.
Really want to try new things and be a foodie.
I think we still have schools for economic reasons that are basically providing for lunches what I would classify as a pre-prepared, either brought in. I won't mention any names of companies, but there are some fast food companies that bring in prepared food because you have a short period of time, you have a low economic threshold to deal with as far as what it costs to have food that kids can afford for lunch. So kids are getting tacos, quick burritos,
Chicken nuggets. You see the typical kid at the high school. I was doing fine until you got to that part.
I could rationalize the burritos and the tacos.
I can remember chicken nuggets and kangaroo hot sauce.
It's tater tots. Anyway, how do we break the cycle of the kids are used to that as their regular everyday school food?
Well, that's a great question, Fred, and that's really in my mind. Twofold. One of them is the work that some of us have been doing in Harvest of the Month. And that is where we go to the school and we highlight a produce item, whether it's a fruit or a vegetable, and the whole school gets to taste whatever that is. And you mentioned Brussels sprouts. Last year in one of our schools, we made a Brussels sprout salad, and overwhelmingly, they loved it because we added lemon and salt and olive oil to it. It was kind of strange, actually, but it was a really great experience. And the other part of that, in school food defense, in school lunches and lunchrooms up and down the Central Coast, we are seeing food reform. We are seeing scratch cooking, local food procurement. We're getting more local foods and fresh foods in the cafeterias.
Let's not get away from that. Let me back up. Define what you're seeing and maybe give me an idea of the kind of menu you're looking at for scratch cooking in a school.
Yeah, they're calling it smarter lunchrooms.
Right. Well, one, for instance, is a chicken soft taco. So you have baked chicken in with salsa and a soft taco shell. And then on the salad bar, you would have salsa, shredded,
like pico de gallo.
Yeah,
like
pico de gallo. Shredded cheese and really great fixins. But the idea, and I think this is where we are all coming to garner help in this movement, is that the kids, because they're not used to eating it like that, in all the years past, they've had hard fried chilled tacos, they're turning their noses up to it and they're not as willing to try this really good food. So
it's just not what they're used
to.
It's not that they don't like it.
So the food is actually good, but my motto is it's not nutrition until it's eaten.
Okay. Well, we won't pick on any school districts, so I'll kind of make sure we stay off the hook with that. What kind of reaction are you getting from school districts? Because their first thought probably is time and money.
Bottom line is the money.
Well, they're
right?
definitely interested in providing good food for the students. I'm a technical advising professional for Smarter Lunchrooms Movement of California. I talk with a lot of food service directors and kitchen managers. They want to feed the kids healthy food, But they want the kids to try the healthy food, and that's where the hard part is. And yes, they do have a concern of time, and they have very short work days, and they have a lot of kids to feed in a very short amount of time. Yeah. But it's manageable.
One of the commentaries has been that, as I understand it, a lot of school officials are saying, when we run predominantly a salad bar for lunch, we discover a tremendous amount of stuff ends up just straight into the trash can.
Or the compost bucket.
Okay,
thank you. All right.
We're working hard on composting programs everywhere. Okay.
But we'd still prefer that they eat it.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. And that's actually a great way that we've gotten some parents involved. They were excited about building soil on campus, and then they see all of the food that is just being picked up from the bar and directly thrown in the compost bucket. Sure, the worms love it, but to be honest, they're overloaded. And the parents go, well, why aren't they putting it in their tummies? Like Lisa said, it's not nutrition until they get it in their bodies. So they've resulted to then wondering what's going on in the cafeteria when they thought that they were just into garden and composting. Now they're into culinary stuff with wellness policies.
Yeah. Right. The wellness policies and the wellness committees, each school has one, and through the years, more and more parental influence is a big factor, actually. And then, like you said, that the food service directors themselves say, we want to do better. And they are. And there is a movement for this. And there's California Thursdays is another movement that, at least on Thursdays, let's have all California produce and Mary's Chicken from the Valley and have as much of a local menu as possible. And I've seen the cafeteria's now also doing like restaurants do, where they have a chalkboard, you know, and create a new menu each day or week, and really trying to liven up things in the cafeterias. Mm.
Are you doing anything specifically? I mentioned earlier, and I realize it's somewhat anecdotal without a lot of research behind it from my observations, and that was that there's a tremendous number of children in the Central Coast, all the way from Salinas down to Ventura County, who have parents or family members that work in agriculture that have no idea what their parents do and have really no idea what the connection of agriculture is to their daily life. How do you bridge that factor?
And that's a great point. And I think, again, that's through the school garden. Some of the things that I have come up against when talking with the students and getting into the garden is they don't want to get dirty. And I do think that that is a direct...
Wait. Kids are willing to get dirty.
No, kids are not willing
to get... A whole nother radio show.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Why don't kids want to get dirty?
Why don't kids want to get dirty? Okay.
Well, and I mean, I do ask, why don't you want to get dirty? Well, we only do laundry on certain days. So there's a reason behind it.
Well, and there's a lot of interesting things on what they think the playground really is or what they see, you know?
Right. There seems to be, for some reason, some sort of negative connotation to what's going on in agriculture as far as what the parents are doing for work, whether it is that they're harvesting, they're cleaning, packing, whatever it is that they're doing, and the idea that they don't want their children to do that work later in life. However, I feel that if we're able to really have open and transparent conversations about this amazing work that they do, that the value of our food and our food system will increase, and kids will have a little more sense of awareness and pride in what their families are doing. But I think there is a disconnect at home. I think the parents aren't speaking to the kids about what it is that they do. They just see that their parents go to work really early, come home really late, and they're really tired.
So that's not necessarily encouraging for the kid. It's like, my parents don't have the energy to really work with me on this, so I don't feel positive about what they do for a living.
Well, yeah. And
There's another connection there, too, in terms of curriculum. That's the world that I live in mostly, is the County Office of Ed, is the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math. So there's other jobs that we could direct kids towards, of management.
Through the gardens,
so that there's other jobs in the industry, in the food industry, in the agriculture business, but also the technology and new inventions, and also to be entrepreneurs, right? That maybe they could one day be
a restaurateur or some kind of company,
that there's a food system that they're connected to. Yeah. It's not
well, and I was separate. Also going to say, too, just when we look at having students and groups in the gardens, we don't just want them to come in and do manual labor. We don't want them to come in and just make the gardens look beautiful, to be a showcase garden for when people walk by, the gates are locked, and boy, that looks gorgeous. No one's in it. No, we want we want students to come in, parents to come in, teachers to come in, and have a sense of well-being when they go and visit the garden. We want them to enjoy it. So it's not that this space is just to be worked on, harvested, and then that's it. It's not a workplace necessarily. It could be a really good place where they get familiar and know how to respect a pickaxe, but that's not all of it.
And it's really a place of, when Victoria and I were talking about, awe and wonder. Mm-hmm. And just recently at one of the schools I work at, we I collaborated with a teacher. We built a vertical green wall, which is recyclable plastic 2-liter bottles, which really aren't that recyclable because they just become plastic again. Yeah. So we're using them as plant containers, and it's a gravitational drip system. And some of them flooded, some of them didn't work that much. And there's your STEM right there. Mm. That's your engineering. Why is this not working, and how do I fix it? And it's all related to edible food. Yeah. So it's a really eye-opening experience. And again, I want to, you know, definitely support what Victoria is saying. We're not just out there working. We do have teachable moments with science and math, literature and art.
Also,
and just opportunity
nature
to breathe.
And nature connection. Yeah. That just having the kids be outside.
Right.
Not in the classroom.
Well, and I think
there's
that
a lot
was
of outdoor education opportunities out in the school gardens.
Exactly. And that was kind of the point which when I heard, you know, that they don't know what their parents do when they go out and they work, necessarily, you know, school gardens, I think they can be places of just mindfulness, you know, themselves, whether or not you're teaching this subject or that subject or focusing on that plant or that plant. So,
teachers don't believe me when I tell them at trainings that I don't have behavior problems in the garden, and I don't. Everybody has something to do, and everybody, and they could be different tasks and different jobs, but we're all doing really well out in the garden. Yeah.
So the presumption for some teachers is that what goes on, if their problem kids or their disruptive kids are going to be just as disruptive there. Actually, that Victoria, that's probably a discussion we had earlier about some of the last time you were here about some of the sustainable agriculture work that your group does with sometimes with kids that are seen as disciplinary problems in school. Mm-hmm. And those are the kids that are the most ripe to get involved in a program like this because they can see some sense of accomplishment. I want to remind folks, this is a program you are welcome to call in if you'd like to be part of the discussion. We're talking about agriculture and food, the way it relates to our children and our school system. And we'd like you to be part of the discussion if you'd like to be. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Teresa Tree, you had something you wanted to jump in here
yes,
with.
Yes, the other phrase that we're coining is edible education. Imagine that. The kids are learning, you know, about their food, how to eat and make choices around their food. So we're calling it edible education. And in the Tri-Counties, that's what the region I serve is, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, Ventura, and also Kern counties. But these Tri-Counties on the coast, we have Growing Edible Education Symposium that we started a couple years ago in Santa Barbara. This October, we just had it in Ventura, and next year we're going to host it in San Luis Obispo. We want to definitely talk about that, and we also want to invite people to continue this conversation on Tuesday. We're having a mixer, farm-to-school mixer, for anyone out there interested in this topic to come together on Tuesday evening, 6:30 p.m.
Right on tree.
At the,
where is that going to be?
Copeland Health Education Pavilion, which is in the French Hospital campus. They built this beautiful building that has three stories. It'll be on the third floor.
Okay, we'll make sure we remind people about that two or three times before we get off the air, too. Are you able to bring people who are involved in agriculture into these environments to talk about it? I mean, we have some very large agricultural operations in this county. Some of it's related to wine, and I realize there may be an issue with whether or not we teach kids how to make wine. But some of it's related to. I mean, so there, we have companies that large companies that grow row crops. lettuce, strawberries. It's very common. I'm wondering if there are opportunities for kids to get a better understanding of what large agriculture is as opposed to just the little truck farm they're working with at school. And how are you tying that together? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can think of one. I want to speak to more anecdotes than just examples of just, I don't know,
okay.
a scenario.
Yeah.
But, you know, last year we brought in Batista Farms, and that is a really well-known family around here that has a lot to do with local agriculture in South County mostly, I think. And we brought him in. He goes by the name of Suave Jave. And, okay. yeah, he did this.
He has his own farm now.
Oh,
Red,
great.
Red Barn Farms.
Okay. Yeah, his story is phenomenal, and I obviously continue to learn more. And I think he also has a plot at Central Coast Grown City Farm now, too. Yeah. And he came in and donated a lot of green beans. And so the kids were able to talk to the farmer and have a harvest of the month where they were able to sample a green bean dish made for them and talk to him on campus. And that was pretty cool for them.
That is the sector that we need to reach out to more. Mm-hmm. We need to reach out to the farmers more. There's Ruiz Farms, the Batista Farms, Red Barn, City Farm. There's a farmers' guild that meets. It has young farmers. And we need to reach out and find some more farmers. Because one of the core elements of farm to school is the school gardens, like we've been talking about, and the education, especially around nutrition around that. But it's the procurement, which is the produce. Where does that come from?
Right.
The farmers, and that is the piece that we really need to start linking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There. As I looked through the information that you provided for me before the program, I was surprised that it seemed that a good portion of the food that is used for school nutrition programs definitely comes from out of the county, or out of the Central Coast, and that surprises me. I mean, there's. Some of our largest romaine lettuce growers are between, you know, between San Ardo and Guadalupe, and things like that. And I'm surprised that there isn't more direct agricultural connection.
Well, there is this tension that exists where food directors, yes, they want to be serving something up on their plates that they can be super prideful of, not just for the culinary aspect, but the local aspect. But they also are working with a really tight budget. With a lot of lunches that they need to subsidize and figuring out that sweet spot where you're paying tribute to the people who grow your food locally and making sure that they can earn a living and being able to provide something superb to our local kiddies. That's where the rub is, I think, that we always are having conversations about with food directors.
Yeah,
in particular.
I think one of the next steps we'll do after the new year is do a training. We went to a training on procurement, and there's a certain formula and a chart that's filled out that the food service directors can give points, kind of like bonus points, if the farmer is mm-hmm. local, and make it work in their budget that brings the price down, but they have to bid for it. And so I think that's
right.
in our future is to do more training on how to make that happen.
To provide some technical training on how these food directors can create proposals to get more bids on buying stuff that they really do want to see. On a weekly basis.
The food system along the Central Coast, like you mentioned, Monterey County, San Luis, Santa Barbara, Ventura, all of this is usually export. The crops are exported across the nation, in fact. And we have that dilemma where it's not a local food system, even though the food is grown here locally, it's then shipped out.
One of the largest Central Coast producers of romaine lettuce ships 90% of his crop to, and this is a large producer, to a specific national chain of fast food that uses a lot of romaine. And it just, that is their, like, their national contract. And to hear that kind of thing surprised me that, because if you go into a local market in San Luis County and buy prepackaged hearts of romaine, 90% of that is coming out of Salinas, which feels local to us, and that's really within our local area. But I'm surprised there's an awful lot that's produced even closer to home for a lot of us than that, but it still is coming out of Salinas. I want to shift gears a little bit. We have a number of school districts on the Central Coast that have a culinary institute or some version of a food service training program that's available to students. In a lot of cases, those are programs that are used to effectively keep kids in school who want some technical training in food service and may not stay in school if they're just in a regular classroom environment. Are you working with those groups, and what kind of response are you getting with those groups?
There's up in Paso Robles.
Right. So particularly, because there was a lot there, would you mind elaborating on what kind of you're leading at there?
A good portion of what you're talking about is teaching people how to deal with ingredients, because unless you're living on straight hamburgers or straight, you know, lamb chops, a predominant amount of what we eat is based upon ground-grown agriculture. So if we have a food service program like a culinary institute that is teaching kids about cooking, that would seem to be a very good entree to teach kids about the fact that it's not all about barbecuing or broiling chicken or cooking a meat product. It's about making a salad, learning
how to... So you're saying how does that play out, really,
how does
in the
that
cafeteria?
Play out?
Well, the examples you have, the Paso Robles.
How do you tie that together? Because I think that...
Culinary arts.
That's already there, and you have schools that are somewhat resistant to spending a lot of time on this.
Well, I know that there are, you know, not just because one good example, which Tree just mentioned, is in Paso Robles School District. They do have the culinary arts program there. We're at their facility where all the school lunches get made. There's an elective program where high schoolers can get credits and learn culinary skills. And they operate a buffet where the public can come in on the side where the lunches are being made and actually order from a menu. And it's actually really tasty and really delicious. And the students help prepare all of those meals. And then you also have, just in general, not just shining light on Paso, but we have all of the cafeteria staffs at the schools have helpers. You know, kids get rewarded by going into the cafeteria. I see this a lot at the elementary schools, where they help serve the yogurt, or they help, you know, chop certain things up or serve fruits or get things on the salad bar going. Like some of the high schoolers, the continuation high school does this, I know, at some of them I've gone to, and the middle school level too. So just actually looking at students going through a line, maybe as a help, not necessarily a nuisance, because I know it's such a short window of time. It's like, how can you get them to help you in advance, reward them, and have them be a part of it? Because if an older adult that I don't really get to talk to throughout the day says, like, take one of these, I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. But if my peer is out there helping serve and cutting it up or having me try it, I'm like, all right, I guess I'll
Lisa,
try it.
Yeah, Lisa, you were with that a lot.
Yeah, one of the things that I work with, and I'm primarily K through 6. I think you were kind of alluding to those culinary institutes that are high school, which are amazing. And let's face it, they've taken away home ec, so we've got to kind of bring it back
in. They're high school-based programs, but to some extent, if you're dealing with a 5th or 6th grader and they have a sibling or a kid in their neighborhood and they're doing that, those younger kids are really think that's really cool. It's like, wow, my, you know, the kid down the block is learning how to cook something that I think is really neat. That's a way to tie that all together.
Well, what's really cool is with UC Cal Fresh Nutrition Education Program, we provide, in a conjunction with 4-H clubs, something called SNAC, which stands for Student Nutrition Advisory Council. And we run these clubs after school one day a week, and culinary is part of it, and that's K through 6. So we are actually teaching the kids how to handle food safely, how to use safe knife skills. Yes, we are doing that.
No, that makes sense.
Don't avoid it.
Yeah. We don't avoid it. We hit it straight on. How to harvest from the garden, wash properly, and to create food from the garden is one of the many goals that we have. And to that end, we also do nutrition education in specific schools, where we go into the classroom where the teacher's been doing nutrition education, and we cook with kids 3 times a year. So we are doing.
Made me think of something similar.
Yeah, a lot to the end of having kids involved in trying new foods, which we know, in order to like something, you must try it at least 12 times.
We did not know that, actually.
And we also take you know, certain types of vegetables and do something different with them. So they may try it in its raw form, and they may try it cooked with something on it that makes it taste a little bit different, mm-hmm. that could appeal to their palate.
Food chemistry.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So we're doing a lot of work in the direction of really getting the kids involved as much as possible, as safely as possible.
Yeah, I'm hearing youth leadership.
Absolutely.
Yeah, having them take charge of harvesting.
And there's also career technical education, CTE, mm-hmm. pathways that, especially at the high school level, are exploring and getting grant monies for, and have many pathways. And agriculture is one of them, and food service is one of them, as well as other sectors of our.
Let's grab a call. We've got Shannon from San Luis Obispo. Are you there, Shannon?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Thanks for joining the discussion.
Great. Yeah, so I just had a couple of questions. It's been really great listening to everybody talk, and then I'll take my answer off the line. But how can people get involved in farm-to-school or garden nutrition? And then my second question is, so you have great food. Let's say your cafeteria is putting some, you know, local produce on the salad bar, but how do you get kids to eat it? So those are my questions.
Okay. Arnie, thanks for the call, and you said you'd take your answers off the line, so thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, jump in. That becomes the key questions on this, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yep. The first question is, how do I get involved? And that's a great question. I provide a training program through the University of California called UC Garden Nutrition Extenders, and that is a specific school garden volunteer program. And we all are aware that we have master gardeners and master food preservers. There was a slight gap in folks that were actually doing school garden work. So we provide this program in conjunction with 4-H, and we completely background check and all that great stuff. These members of the community are able to go out into the schools, establish a relationship with that school, with the principal, and they find their own classroom to work with, and they get those kiddos out into the garden. So that's a great way to volunteer. And for more information about that, you would just contact me at UC Cooperative Extension, and I can give
I just got trained in that. I'm a GNE, and I go to Cambria Grammar School, mm-hmm. and not only do the lessons in the classroom, but also get the kids to eat and try new vegetables, the different tricolor carrots, for example, or the six plant part burrito. And then go out to the side of the garden.
Wait,
and then
the six plant part burrito. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Okay. I can count to six. Tell me what a six plant part burrito is.
Oh, you got your roots, stems, leaves, flowers, fruits, and seeds.
Okay.
Roots, stems, leaves, flowers, fruits, and seeds.
Okay.
The training
word. Right. Okay. Thank you.
I'm so glad.
Better understand. I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you didn't ask me to do that. Anyway, my thought is the average school day does not have a whole lot of extra time for teachers. It doesn't have a whole lot of extra time for kids. How do you address that? Okay, everybody's pointing at you.
Oh, well, there's a couple things. Yeah, I know that what we are in the schools during the school day, and sometimes what we're looking for is to just have them open during recesses and lunchtime for garden clubs. So our staff through One Cool Earth has taken on some of that responsibility to have someone who's on the volunteer paperwork through the school district to be able to be cleared and be there for the kids, you know, open up the gardens, just having the kids occupy them, no matter if they're learning something in particular or not, just occupy the garden. And we do train and have volunteer parents who are interested in that opportunity. They get a little intimidated about co-teaching sometimes, but one great way to get them to be maybe more confident in that and build their confidence in the garden is just by getting out there at lunch or recess. And then, of course, we do after-school programs as well. Actually, we, for the first time in our county, have had a Food Corps member, and her name's Mariah. She's wonderful. And she's...
Wait, back at what is a Food Corps?
Food Corps is a national program okay. through...
Yeah, you just can't throw that out and not explain it.
I know.
Okay.
It sounds pretty awesome. Food Corps. Yeah. And it's a branch of AmeriCorps. A national program.
Okay.
And so they get together and partner with nonprofits locally to have these Food Corps members nationally give their service. And so our county has a food corps member that's supported by our nonprofit. And she works particularly in three elementary schools. And so she's trying on this new curriculum for after school called Sprout Scouts, kind of like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. And it's pretty great. So there's opportunities to work with after school programs and train them how to use the Sprout Scouts material so that we are not the sole people, you know, in the garden at lunch or after school teaching in the garden.
How many of the schools have the space to do this without having to say, oh, I've got no space for a garden?
Most of the schools have some kind of
That's
school garden.
That's a lot of what they have.
It's about 80%.
Okay, they have, okay, so that, okay.
About 80% of our schools have some kind of school garden. And there's multiple agencies that are helping. There's Co-op Extension. There's One Cool Earth. There is Public Health. We're starting to chart it all, and that's what we're going to do on Tuesday is start getting more stakeholders of who's helping at what gardens. There's Tom Taylor.
There's CapSlow.
CapSlow. There's all these different agencies that are helping at the school gardens. And then the other question was asked about how to get the kids to eat it, right, is to make it fun. And to have the clubs, have the after school, all these programs, there's Youth Works, is to have those recipes. You guys have really great recipes.
We have great recipes. And again, I want to go back to the Smarter Lunchrooms movement, which I think a lot of people are very unfamiliar with. I, again, have asked a lot of food service if they are familiar with it, and they're not. It's about really making the lunchroom a great place to be. And I asked the kids recently, you know, as they go through the salad bar line and there's food all over, like dropped lettuce and stuff on the ground, if you went to a restaurant, would you want to eat there? And they were like, well, no, it's dirty. And so why are we doing that and leaving that environment for our students? That doesn't make sense to me. I want to go and eat in an environment that's light and vibrant and has good nutritional, good nutritious food that tastes good. One of the things that I've done as a community education specialist is I go and I eat lunch with the kids. But I'm not a celebrity. Who is? And it's the teachers. It's parents. It's the administrators. It might be a police officer or a firefighter. Those are our celebrities. And how cool is that to have them come once a month and visit and eat with the kids.
Just sit down.
And eat from the salad bar and eat from the school lunch and eat with the kids. We did that at Georgia Brown about 4 years ago with Cal Poly athletes. It works. And it's a lot of fun, and it's really important.
And then afterwards, they play basketball with the kids. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's and any other kind of sports. Yeah. But really honoring, you know, let's face it, when you go to school hungry or you don't eat lunch because you don't like the way it tastes, by 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the afternoon, your head has to be pounding, your stomach growling. You can't possibly feel good and be in a learning type situation. And I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't want to put a child in that situation. So to me,
well, I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for my mom till 5 o'clock in the afternoon to get off work, and I skipped lunch or I ate like a couple bites because I didn't like it.
Right.
And I was feeling whatever about it. And
so well, we're really honoring our food and honoring the area in which we eat our food. And that's a great way to get your kids to try foods.
Yeah. Teresa, Tree, jump on it. You had something else.
Yes, that raises the point that, again, there's so many agencies that are helping this, like the food bank. They have these farmers markets for the kids at the school. So the kids get to purchase with fake money and then take it home. And then they provide recipes. And Co-op Extension does that work. And Public Health does that work. And here throughout our county and our community, there's different groups that are helping this gap. They call it the food insecure. Right. They get food to the families.
We need to stick with that one for a while because one of my questions was whether or not a lot of these kids even have an idea what a farmer's market is. Right. So the food bank is putting on farmer's markets in school.
It's called Children's Farmer's Market.
Okay. Right. And how is that structured and how often are they doing that? Wow.
It's really cool. They do it once a month, and they do it at various school sites, and I do believe it depends on income contingency, of course. And they give the kids fake food bank bucks, and they're really cool. Yeah. And so they choose of the variety of fruits and vegetables, what, say, for instance, a pear is 2 for $1. pears are two for a dollar, or you know, it's four carrots for a dollar, and they get to choose how they want to spend their food bank bucks. And they get a bag, and they start filling up their bag with fruits and vegetables and make their own decisions about how and what they want it.
And they're using that model for the family farmers market style when they have the food distribution, rather than here's your bag, just take it home. Yeah. Like, here, you get to choose now and put it in a bag to take home to your family, and here's some recipes, and we have staff people that cook it and sample it, you know, so they're doing all of that.
Yeah, because my next question as you got to that was actually I was waiting for an opportunity to wonder how many of the kids you're dealing with have either get to go to a farmer's market in their community all the time, or how many of them have no idea what a farmer's market is in their community. I don't think we've got any place in San Luis or Santa Barbara County where you can't be within about probably 6 or 8 miles of a farmer's market, and probably a lot less than that on a weekly basis.
Right. And a lot of them don't know about the EBT that's accepted at the farmer's markets. I've had so many students, like you said, don't even know that there's a farmer's market, let alone that they can accept food stamps to be able to buy fresh food. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I had this little sad story that one of the kids that came here said, I don't get to go grocery shopping. Like, that's like off limits somehow. Like, you know, in other
words,
mom's
in a hurry, dad's in a hurry, whoever.
They don't get that experience. But I was kind of wanting to make that like as a homework. I told him, this is your fun homework, is to go grocery shopping, is to go to the farmer's market, is to try and finding one different other kind of root, for example, that you've never tried before. And same with the other six plant parts, but to actually have that as homework, so to speak, extend the learning, in other words, from the garden to the classroom and vice versa to the cafeteria and then to the family. So there's a lot of, with the Harvest of the Month too, right, Lisa, there's a lot of messaging that goes home to the families.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, every Harvest of the Month that we do at our schools, we send home Harvest of the Month literature in English and Spanish with that have recipes with it.
Okay. I promise not to make you answer what school or what district this is, but I'm curious, are you getting any resistance from any school districts, and how much has that become a frustration or a problem? Or is it just a matter of getting
the
opportunity?
Honestly, all of us are shaking our heads right now because we don't have any resistance from any school saying, we don't want this.
I mean, to the extent in which individual schools are involved is, I think, directly related to how many staff members we all have and volunteers that we all have, which is why we're here, because we want folks to come to our mixer on Tuesday, and we want to expose them to the fact that you don't have to know how to garden and you don't need to know about nutrition. You just need to really understand that this is a vital link between kids, parents, and our community, that to get involved. And it actually doesn't take too much volunteer time either to do this really fun community engagement.
Yeah. Well, and I was wondering about this today because I was really thinking about sitting down at the table here and conversing with you three. And I'm also looking at this chart that Tree has on the table of all these amazing partners that we work with, whether that be an organization or an individual or another subcommittee of something within the county or tri-counties. And I want to stress that, yes, we have so many people focused on these really vital issues, I mean, of getting kids to create healthy habits for them in the home. And at the same time, it seems like, on the long term, for folks that are really wanting to make institutional changes in these schools, it winds up being a few of us that continue that conversation. No one is going to say that they don't want farm to school. No one's going to say, oh, we don't want school gardens. It's just something that you can't say no to. I mean, people gravitate towards it. They love that conversation. And we need more people to stick it out and be a part of the real movement, because the schools aren't going anywhere, and they really need our long-term support if we're going to make these institutional changes.
Right. And Victoria, I just had a conversation with a principal recently on the coast, and she said, you know, school gardens, they wax and wane. You know,
yeah.
they get really interested in them, and then that teacher moves on, and then they go fallow. And one of the things that I think is really, really important is not just looking at it as a school garden, but a community garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, your older students, your fifth and sixth graders, are mentoring the younger students.
Yeah.
And that's the way you keep that cycle going of sustainability in
right.
your school garden.
Yeah, the Farm to School movement is national. It's USDA-sponsored. They have grants. It's been around since the 1990s. They're starting to say now that it's almost like 40% of the schools that have farm-to-school programs, and it can take many models. You could have community garden plots at the school. They're also looking now at having farm plots on the school. They're starting to do that in Ventura. And then another program I'm involved with is get the schools to the farm. At City Farm, mm-hmm. we have a plot where the kids can come for field trips. So they're going to do more field trips in the future, too.
Do we have any more city? We used to have city farm parks, too. I mean, when
Are you
I lived
about
in
community gardens,
community gardens, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's been some resurgence of that, but I'm surprised that it's not as common as I thought it would
well,
be.
Well, cities have actually usually their parks and rec department mm-hmm. has community garden managers, and for instance, in San Luis Obispo, they do have that, and they have about I don't know off the top of my head. I feel like four.
Yeah.
Community gardens.
About that.
One of them's going in pretty soon through a Kiwanis partnership with One Cool Earth. to do one with recycled water, actually. So that's a very interesting
cool.
project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, I want to make sure, let's talk again just for a moment. What's coming up on the 15th? Let's make
November
sure.
November 15th, okay. next Tuesday.
Okay.
It is our Farm to School Mixer.
Okay.
And it's a gathering of all stakeholders who are interested in this topic. And it's going to be fun. We're going to have soup. And the idea about the stone soup that we all have an ingredient, we all have something we can contribute to this movement. Again, Tuesday, November 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the French Hospital. They have this new facility called Copeland Health Education Pavilion on the third floor back behind French
okay.
Hospital.
And that's open to anyone. There's no fee to be there. Okay.
And, Arnie. You know, I've been there once for an event, and you really should get there a little early because, I mean, French Hospital has made a lot of changes.
Okay.
The Copeland Center is beautiful. It's a third floor in a new building.
Okay. We have a few minutes left, and as I promise all my guests, I want to give you a chance to talk about what you think we've either missed or haven't covered enough. Teresa Tree, I'm going to start with you. Why don't you jump in and give us a little idea of what we want to make sure people don't forget about what we want to do with agriculture in schools.
Okay, thank you for that and for this time together today. So we already mentioned next Tuesday,
okay.
the mixer. And then from that, we're going to have our first planning meeting for this symposium that I mentioned. I want to mention that again, Growing Edible Education, or what we're calling the G, symposium. And that will be in December 5th at the Cooperative Extension Auditorium at 5 p.m. And so that's another thing coming up is our first planning meeting. We're going to be planning this all year, and we'll be working with One Cool Earth because we're going to host it up in Paso Robles, where there's a lot of school gardens up there. So you can get involved in the planning for the G Symposium, the Growing Edible Education. And we're going to have that meeting on December 5th.
Right, and the G is going to be when?
At 5 p.m. And the symposium is going to be next October. A year out from now, in 2017 in Paso Robles. We're looking at October 6th and 7th.
Okay, so we're giving people almost a year lead time to know about that, so you can't pretend like you didn't know about it. And that'll be good from that standpoint. Okay, Victoria, why don't you jump in? Because we haven't talked completely about what you do beyond this, because the program we've talked about before is very involved. But we've got a couple of
right.
minutes for you.
I was just down okay. in the creek bed looking okay. at bentomacroinvertebrates today, talking about science stuff, ecology. So, yeah, it's great to swap over to food talk today. Well, let's see. I think that from One Cooler standpoint, so we are in about 20 schools up and down the county, different school districts, and ways that you can easily get involved. Go on our website, onecoolearth.org. It's O-N-E, cool as in you're pretty cool, Fred, and then earth.org. And then our Facebook page also is a lot more live. And we have a garden work day coming up this Saturday from 10 to 2. I'll be up at Georgia Brown doing some renovation on 36th Street at the Georgia Brown Elementary School community garden. So, yeah, we're expecting a lot of intergenerational interactions. There's grandpas who come, grandmas, moms, you know, Flamson middle school kids right next door who went to Georgia Brown and their little siblings. So that's always fun to be a part of after school or weekend garden work parties. And then I guess the other thing is just donating and thinking about spending either tithing your time or donating to some of these nonprofits that you know are out there on the front lines. So we're really happy to be a part of this conversation today. So thanks.
I think sometimes we get and we talk to friends and ourselves, we think about the fact that we don't have specific skills. Mm-hmm. You've all reiterated sometime today that it doesn't take any great agricultural skills.
No. We've had a dad's club, you know, want to renovate some nursery benches, you know, that mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You know, you don't even have to really get into gardens. We'll hook you once you get there, but.
Okay. Alrighty, Lisa, it's your turn.
Great. Thank you so much. And again, thanks for having us today. Again, the Farm to School Mixer is going to be a great place to network. So that's Tuesday night at 6:30 over there at the French Hospital. I'm directly working with school garden volunteers. And if you're interested in any level, whether you have experience or not, feel free to contact me. You can phone us at Cooperative Extension or just Google UC Cooperative Extension, San Luis Obispo, you'll find us. Again, I do UC CalFresh Nutrition Education. That's the program that I am affiliated with. And if your school or your school's garden needs some pick-me-up or you have somebody that's interested in revamping your garden, give me a call. And then I can kind of direct you either to me or to One Cool Earth. Yeah. I kind of handle South County. They're kind of North County. Okay. And but, you know, there's so many resources, and I think that being said, I don't know all the resources out there, so I'm always looking for farmers who want to donate time or want to talk to the kids at school or farm companies that want to donate things or, you know, their work time, any of those things. I think the bottom line is just really having a lot of open communication. Mm-hmm. To piggyback what Victoria said, nobody wants to say, no, I don't want my kid to eat good food at school. I mean, <No. laughs> we want children to be able to have access to healthy, fresh foods at school and to be cognizant and aware of what is available to them.
And they don't assuming that they don't like things.
Right. Don't assume they don't like something, and don't assume that they understand what's good for them and what's less healthy for them. A lot of folks don't understand what's healthy and what isn't due to media. And, you know, we have the choice to make the choice.
Yeah, I'm sure that the average 6-year-old believes that chicken McNuggets yes. and tater tots are the best foods in the entire world. And it just comes that way.
And parents think that that's the only thing that they'll eat, but it isn't true.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a couple more seconds because one of the things we didn't talk about was, can you please give us a brief explanation for what Cooperative Extension is?
Yes, very quickly. Okay. Cooperative Extension is a university-based land grant that was given to all universities where they would have money for a university and then they would develop these county extension offices where professors, or we call our advisors, mm-hmm. Go out and provide education to our community. So we have farm advisors and staff members that work at Cooperative Extension, and we run from nutrition education, horticulture, small crops, large crops, hardwoods, and anything agriculturally related that you have a question to, give us a ring.
Okay, great. Thank you. This has, of course, been Central Coast Voices. I thank you for joining us today. A couple of things to remind you about. As you know, Central Coast Voices is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County and Action for Healthy Communities. We do a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. The new report for 2016 comes out this December. And you can find old reports and also access to the new reports as soon as it comes out at actionslo.org. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you. We're not quite sure what her topic is next week, but I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. But Chris always has some great, interesting guests, and we're glad that she's going to be with us next week. I want to remind you that this program is made possible by an underwriting grant from Joan Gellert Sargent, and we thank you her for her support. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org for email or call us at 543-2323. I want to thank my guest today, Lisa, Teresa Tree, and Victoria for being with us on a wonderful topic. This American Life is coming up next, one of my very favorite radio programs. And this has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.